Welcome to part two of our conversation with Beth about life of hauntings.
What is the goal when you take on a home investigation and you decide I'm going to look into this further? Is it mainly to give the individuals validation, or is it to rid a home of something? Is it just to try and get data? For you, what is it?
It's actually a bit of a combination of all three, but usually for me, when I take on a private or residential case, the first thing I ask them is, what do you want from this? I actually go back to front. I go, what do you want from this? Because sometimes people say, I just want to know that I'm not crazy. Mm-hmm. Some people are like, I believe there's a spirit here and I want it gone. And some people will say, look, my wife thinks there's something here. I think it's a load of baloney and I need someone to let her know that she's just overreacting. And you can get all different types of reasons why people want an ending to what's happening, because they're contacting you because there's uncomfortability there somewhere. You know, nobody wants to feel afraid in their home. It's your place of rest. So it's finding out from the beginning what is it they want from it and then going backwards from there. So for me, if they are looking for something to, you know, I believe my home is haunted and I want it, the spirit to be moved on, I'm like, awesome, fabulous. I know people I can get you in touch with. Mm-hmm. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
If someone says, look, I want to know what's happening. I don't know if it's something paranormal or something that's explainable. I'm seeing things. I'm hearing things. Can somebody come in and pull this apart so I can actually live in my home? Because I want to be happy and safe. That's my forte. And I'm like, all right, cool. I know people. We'll get the ball rolling. Start writing a diary for the next couple of weeks, because it will take time for us to organize everything together. But we need to see what's happening and when it's happening and if there's any patterns, and then we can start to work from there. Mm-hmm. Normally, about 9 times out of 10, people will actually not get back in contact with you, because not everybody's going to want to have it answered. Sometimes you'll get people like, oh, I've seen those shows. I'm like, mm-hmm, I know those ones. And they're like, oh, but I really, you know, I've seen that. I'd love to have somebody come and investigate my home. Okay. That's wonderful. It's not going to be me.
Yeah.
But yeah, usually it's to find out what they want. What the client wants is usually mm-hmm. how then I will direct how the call is going to go, how the information is going to go. And I've got people who do spirit clearings, and that's a whole other ball game. It's completely out of my realm.
Sure.
But when it comes to investigating possible phenomena and trying to figure things out, that's where I become really excited about.
Have you ever been on an investigation where you're trying to figure things out and almost, you know, trying to determine, you know, do we need other people in here to clear this out or something of that nature, where you felt, this is a lot. Like this is not going to be an easy task for whoever is going to take on that portion of the investigation, where it's too dark. I don't want to necessarily go with demonic, but something that just is something you don't want to dig too much deeper into because you don't know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm. I think normally for me, it's been about having a really good vetting system in place in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Then you already know what you're getting yourself into before you've even actually met the person. So there's a screening process I have with questions, and I'll say to them, look, and it sounds really awful, I'm actually going to be asking the same question a couple of times. Trust me on this. You know, it's not that I haven't listened the first time. I don't know how to research or take notes. I just need to know this information properly. What I'm basically doing is, you know, the truth is easier to remember than a lie.
Sure.
So if people are going to, and sometimes, unfortunately, there are people that will change, the story changes quite a bit over time. And a lot of this happens before I even get onto site to interview them. So there is a stringent process for me to actually, before I even go there, to avoid that, because there will be people, because you don't want to get in over your head.
Yeah.
Often, you know, I'm a mental health first aider. And I've run mental health first aid coordinated courses for paranormal investigators in Australia, mm-hmm. because I think it's one thing that we should have, as well as being first aid trained as well.
Yeah.
So, and that could be all sorts of things, just being, not just being aware about someone's mental health, mm-hmm. but and actually being aware of the signs, because not all of us know, but we should, especially within dealing with private cases and residential cases. But also for people who run events, sometimes someone might have an anxiety attack, mm-hmm. or panic, and you've got the tools to actually be able to help them through it until they're calm enough, and then someone that they know that can be with them to help them feel even better. So little things like that, I think that's probably the first part, is making sure, yeah, like you said, you're biting off more than you can chew. And it's an ethical issue as well. Sometimes people can be very, very good at hiding information about themselves physically. physically and mentally, which is fine. That can happen. Rare, but it can happen. I remember hearing once there was a paranormal team in the US that would actually, when they did a home visit to the person in Chatterton, they would actually open up their medicine cabinet and their bathroom cabinets to see what medications they were on. I don't advise that at all. I was actually quite shocked about that.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, again, you're only getting told what they want you to know. With that regard sort of thing. So it's you are going by what people say, but at the same time, over time, you become a pretty good person reader in that way. Sure. It's what people say and what they don't say.
Yeah. And that's got to be interesting. I mean, how often would you say when you're getting contacted for an investigation, a private type investigation, that you discover, you know, early on, you are dealing with someone that is suffering from mental health issues?
Very early on, and because it's often by email. Okay. And you can see through, often through email is the first point of contact, and you can see the way the email is written.
Yeah.
Often there will be other groups that I will also, and I used to do this back in Australia a lot more, I will actually touch base with, because, say, for instance, someone's contacted me saying, none of these paranormal teams are taking my case information seriously. I'm looking for someone to help me. It's like, that's a red flag already.
Yeah.
They're shopping for somebody to validate their beliefs mm-hmm. that aren't needed to be there. So it's So that's having a good network of other paranormal investigating teams that you can do that with is mm-hmm. really good. That's why I'm so much about community and collaborating with other paranormal teams, because then you've got a good network and go, oh yeah, that person contacted me about 6 months ago. We went to their home. They're going through a mental health issue. I suggested they go back to their GP or their doctor and actually speak about it. They got quite upset. You know, we're not mental health professionals. Even sure. if you are, you should take that hat off and only just investigate. You're not there to be their therapist.
Yeah.
You're there, you know, that kind of, and it does become a very gray area. And again, it's all about ethics as well.
And that's got to be difficult when you're in that sort of situation where, you know, like, especially like if maybe like the vetting process didn't quite, reveal that right up front, and you're maybe in the midst of an investigation and you start to see some of those signs, you know, up close and personal, and you start realizing, wait a second. I mean, how do you handle something like that? Do you flat out say, I mean, once you've really been convinced there's nothing going on here other than this person needs some help, you know, is it really kind of depend on the situation? Like, if you feel safe saying that to the individual, or do you politely excuse yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great, and that's a very, very valid question. And it's a hard question as well, because when you've done your initial questioning, you go there, and you can, even before you investigate or even afterwards, very rarely, but it can happen for other paranormal teams as well. And like you said, you turn around and go, well, sorry, I think there are some mental health issues, but thanks anyway. Nobody wants to hear that.
No, exactly. Nobody wants to hear that. And it's like the last thing anybody wants. Even worse than like, yes, you have ghosts. It's like, no, you yourself have your own thing going on. It's not ghosts. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And that's it. And that's where it comes from the first aid mental health training, in the sense mm-hmm. you can sit and go, look, and I've done it twice, and it is, with all respect, it's awkward as get out, like sure. literally just. So I've said, look, we've looked at these issues that you are having, and a big indication generally, if something may possibly be more of a mental health issue than a paranormal one, is when that's only the one person that's experiencing everything. Mm-hmm. Because if I call it an inside and outside job. So it's an inside job if it's psychological. It's an outside job if it's environmental. And often if people are experiencing something just on their own all the time and no one else in the home is actually experiencing it, that could be an indication. But anyways, as you said, it's a very delicate conversation to have. Mm-hmm. And it is one that I've done, as I said, twice. And it's you feel confronted, but at the same time, you have to be honest, and it comes from a place of duty of care and caring for them. So it's mm-hmm. the way I've gone about it. It's like, look, you know, we've had a look at the phenomena, we've had a look at the different things that you're experiencing for ourselves. We personally don't think there's anything possibly paranormal going on. Here's some information that you might want to have a read through, or And again, double check with your health professional as well, because if there's other things going on physiologically with you, if it's something that can be explained, it will give you peace of mind. So if it's something they're seeing visually, if it's something audibly, have your hearing checked, maybe you'll go and see an eye doctor, but your GP will be able to point you in those directions. We just want to make sure we've covered everything, because you want peace of mind, and that's the only, this is for us, we feel this is the next step.
Yeah. And then be standing by the door, just ready.
Yeah, it is. It can be, absolutely. Yeah. And it is. And I think that sometimes people think, I want to go investigate a really haunted, someone's haunted home. It's like, yeah, there's a whole other ball game going on there, girlfriend. So yeah, it's exactly. Not as fun as what you think it is.
Yeah. What have you seen? How do mental health professionals handle it when someone legitimately is having a haunting? They are legitimately having these experiences. And they bring that up to their GP or a doctor or something. I mean, wouldn't that almost always be handled by the medical profession as there's a mental illness going on here? Or have you ever seen it where they're like, we've tried to narrow all this down and we're still, no, there's nothing going on with you. There's might be something going on in your house.
Then that's something, that's information they can provide to a trusted paranormal investigation team. Mm-hmm. So then there has been people that say, I know, like there were people that will actually be very honest and mm-hmm. when they've made contact with myself and other groups and said, I actually do suffer from schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. I'm on medication. I know the first thing you're going to think is that's what this is, but it's not, because it's me and other people in my household are dealing and experiencing yeah. this. So that's the other thing too, just because someone has a mental health issue doesn't mean they can't experience something paranormal.
No.
You can't. So it's been something that's happened in the past as well. But again, it's about them being very upfront about it mm-hmm. as well. So that's always good. It's like, okay, so now what we're dealing with as well, and also knowing how to tread very carefully with somebody who's also in that frame of mind. Yeah. And there's some people, mediums I've met over the years that sometimes believe some people who do have mental health issues can actually be even more open to receiving all any types of possible paranormal phenomena than your Joe Bloggs.
Yeah.
So, they're just like, it's like, just they just seem to, because they don't have the same judging judginess in their mind, all sorts of things going on. They just seem to be like an open book more so than somebody else. So it's a tricky dance.
I agree on that, because just over hearing thousands upon thousands of stories over the years on our shows, one thing that I've noticed is it does seem that those that do have mental health issues, but like you said, recognize it, accept it, and can tell the difference between them suffering from what they're dealing with versus having an experience. And I would be led to believe in many cases that there's a higher, victimization, if you will, of individuals that are suffering with something because I think whatever it is on the other side, especially if it's something negative, knows they won't be believed. And so they're already dealing with their own cornucopia of things that is physiological. But there's, I think, sometimes more things that then go in there, and who's going to believe them? And they just, it's like a silent suffering type thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And, it's sort of like between a rock and a hard place. Mm-hmm. It's like, no one's going to believe me because I've got audible and visual hallucinations that I'm on medication for, which can drown me out. But if you're experiencing something and you've been drowned out by medication and other people, that's the biggest thing, is witness collaboration. Mm-hmm. If it's other people also experiencing similar phenomena, same would be great, but similar is very intriguing as well. Then that is important. And I think that's worth exploring, but it's treading very carefully, knowing your ethics and, because again, there are not everybody who has a mental health issue will be willing to let you know of that. Sure. And also at the same time will be more than happy to entertain the type of illusions that they have, because the more that you give food to their hallucinations, that the less they are with stepping back in their own health and their own healing as well. So it's and again, you just have to leave it to the professionals. But there is, it's a fine line.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Beth Darlington about a life of hauntings. A big thank you to her for joining us on the program today and sharing her experiences. And thank you for supporting the program and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without you. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.